Hello and welcome back to the Gubba Podcast. I'm Gubba, a first-time homesteader following in the footsteps of my homesteading forebears. In this podcast, I talk about homesteading, prepping, and everything in between. Today, I want to talk to you about what you should be doing right now on your homestead. Spring is slowly approaching. Some of you may already be experiencing what feels like spring. Spring is really the season of renewal, and for homesteaders like us, it marks the start of one of the busiest times of the year. It's the time to shake the dormancy and tiredness almost of winter and get a look at what's going on outside on the homestead. Sometimes this can be scary, like the piles of fallen branches I need to do something with, random pallets around the yard, and other projects I didn't get to before the snow set in. And when I say scary, I mean overwhelming. You know, you walk out, the snow's no longer covering what you didn't do, but you can take it step by step depending on what projects you want to accomplish. So I want to discuss a few things that you can do this spring to prepare to transition into summer and our time of abundance. So by focusing on soil preparation, garden planning, which is a huge one, livestock care, homestead overall maintenance, and food preservation, you can set yourself up for a successful summer and a smooth transition into fall. So let's break down these tasks and I can give you a run through of what I am experiencing and taking on here on my homestead. The first thing I really think of when I am going into spring is the garden. And when you first start thinking of your garden, you need to remember that your garden is only as good as the soil it grows from and the water that falls on it. If you are lacking in soil nutrients and water sources, your garden may struggle. And I'm being generous there, it probably will struggle. My garden is one of my largest projects, so I start my spring out early with my garden planning and tending to. The most important thing is the soil preparation. So soil preparation is the foundation of a healthy and productive garden, literally. The first step in soil prep is to test your soil's pH and nutrient levels to be aware of what you are working with. This was actually one of the first things I did on my homestead when I moved in. Like, seriously, pause, hold the phone on all the other projects when I moved in. I got my soil tested as soon as I moved in. Ideally, you should work it into your housing contract to test it before you move in so you know what you're heading into. Like, say there was a big chemical spill on the homestead that you're looking at purchasing, but you didn't know because nobody told you, but that soil test could reveal a lot about what is going on in the area. Also, keep in mind that there are things in the sky that do affect the soil, but you can only do so much, okay? So don't be hard on yourself, but get that ground tested so you know what you are working with. You can do this using an at-home soil test or by sending a sample to a local agricultural extension office for a more detailed analysis. And understanding your soil's composition, it allows you to make the necessary amendments to optimize plant growth, like what you want to do, what you want to make your garden. Different plants thrive in different pH levels and with different nutrients. So for example, blueberries and potatoes prefer acidic soil with a pH below 6, while vegetables like cabbage and asparagus do best in alkaline soil above 7. So if your soil is too acidic, you can add agricultural lime to raise the pH. On the other hand, if your soil is too alkaline, you can add in sulfur, peat moss, or organic matter like composted leaves. In addition to pH, soil health is heavily dependent on organic matter. So compost, aged manure, and natural fertilizers like bone meal and blood meal can replenish depleted nutrients and improve your soil structure, ensuring better water retention, which is so important, and aeration for plant roots. You need your roots to be able to penetrate your soil. You also have crop rotation and cover cropping are all these other important methods for maintaining your soil fertility and preventing disease buildup. So think of these things as you go throughout your season. Plan ahead. You can start planning now. That's kind of what spring is for. Like, okay, how am I going to plan? Now that I have a plan, make a plan of action and just get out there and do it, whether that's testing your soil, amending your soil. You also have crop rotation. season. And this is where you don't plant the same plants in the same area each season. You move them around the garden to where they will work. So that's why it's important to make a map of your garden so you can remember right now where you planted your tomatoes. You don't want to plant them in the same area. You don't want to plant your peas in the same area. You could swap them. This helps so much with pests because the pests come back and expect their food source, your crops, to be where they were last sown. But if you have rotated your crops, they will not be off to a good start. You also have companion planting to help with this. And companion planting isn't just about helping plants grow better together. It's also one of the best ways to build up and improve soil health naturally. Isn't that so cool? So out on the homestead, I see it as a way to work with the land rather than constantly trying to fix depleted soil with fertilizers. You're running to the garden center, you don't know what's in them. So certain plants play a big role in enriching your soil, breaking up hard ground, and even keeping pests at bay, all while growing food at the same time. And that is so cool. This is the knowledge that when I say knowledge has been lost in just a few generations, it's things like this, the companion planting, the crop rotating, really how to work your garden. So you have legumes like peas and beans, which are some of my favorite soil builders. They pull nitrogen from the air and store it in their roots, which means that when I plant them near heavy feeders like corn or leafy greens, those plants get a free nitrogen boost. Then there are the deep-rooted plants like daikon radishes, which are yummy pickled, and carrots, which are also incredible pickled, that dig down and break up compacted soil, creating natural pathways for water, air, and microbes to move through. And over time, this makes the soil softer and more fertile without needing to till it constantly. Another trick to keeping soil healthy is mixing up what you plant together so one crop isn't pulling out the same nutrients over and over again. So you have these heavy feeders like tomatoes. They do well when paired with plants like basil or marigolds, which don't drain the soil as much. Some plants like clover and comfrey mine deep nutrients and bring them to the surface. So isn't that so cool? So they act like this natural fertilizer for everything around them. And it's just so neat that every plant seems to have a role to play and they all have their different personalities. And this is just something to keep in mind when you're planning your garden. It can be as simple or complex as you want it to be, but in the back of your mind, be thinking, okay, I'm going to have my tomatoes here, which is different from where they were last year. And I can get some marigolds because that will help with the soil and that will help with pests, for example. Marigolds release compounds that fight off harmful nematodes, while strong smelling herbs like thyme and rosemary keep unwanted bugs from setting up shop as well. So having less pest pressure means I don't have to rely on chemical sprays, which I never would, but that helps keep your soil life thriving. And over time, using companion planting to work with the land instead of against it creates that rich, thriving soil that only gets better season after season. So you see, we are thinking into the next season, we're setting ourselves up, we're planning for this year. It's just a simple, sustainable way to keep the garden healthy while growing strong, nutrient-dense food. Another thing that you can do this spring, if you haven't already, is seed starting. So seed starting is another crucial step, particularly for warm season crops that need a head start before being transplanted outdoors. If you haven't already, now's the time to begin your seed indoors for tomatoes and peppers and squash. Maybe even earlier, depending where you live. Using seed trays and grow lights can create the optimal conditions for germination, while a heat mat can provide warmth to encourage sprouting. And make sure you harden off your seedlings by gradually exposing them to the outdoor conditions before transplanting them into the garden to prevent shock. I feel like this is one of the most common mistakes gardeners make when they're first starting, is they think, oh, I have my seedlings, they've all grown great inside. let me put them outside now because they're ready to go, they will most likely die because they're not used to the outside conditions. And seed starting, like I mentioned, really depends on the type of plant and your growing zone. If you don't know your growing zone, you can call a local garden center and ask. But generally, I like to start seeds indoors about 6 to 10 weeks before my last expected frost date. So you want to know your last frost date, which is important in spring, and then your first frost date, which is important in the fall. So for cool season crops like lettuce, kale, and brassicas, I start them early, about 10 to 12 weeks before the last frost, so they have a head start and can be transplanted as soon as the soil is workable, which is so soon. I'm so excited. And warm season crops like tomatoes, peppers, and eggplants need a little less time, usually 6 to 8 weeks before the last frost to grow strong enough for transplanting. Then there are fast-growing crops like squash, cucumbers, and melons, which don't like to be indoors for too long. I usually start those 3 to 4 weeks before the last frost, or just direct sow them when the soil is warm enough. You need to keep in mind as well what crops have sensitive roots, like watermelons. If you seed start them, they do not like their roots fussed with when you go to transplant. So you have to consider that with what kind of containers you're using. You can use compostable containers so you can put them right into the ground. Read your seed packets for further instructions to your individual plant and crop you have. Really, timing is everything when it comes to seed starting, and a little planning goes a long way, as you can tell. I mean, years a long way into making sure plants are healthy, your soil's healthy, your garden is thriving, and to make sure that your seeds that you started and put so much time and effort into thrive once they're moved outside. And direct sowing is an excellent method for early season crops that can withstand cool temperatures. So direct sowing is you're skipping the seed starting indoors, you're just putting your seeds right into the ground. So you have hardy vegetables like peas, lettuce, radishes, and carrots, which can be planted directly into the ground as soon as the soil is workable. It's essential to prepare your garden beds by loosening the soil, you know, that aeration, and removing any leftover debris from winter before sowing seeds. Spacing and depth are critical factors to consider to ensure even germination, healthy plant development, and this information will be on your seed packet most likely. Keep in mind for your garden, controlling weeds early on. Weed and pest control should be addressed early to prevent problems later in the season. Mulching is one of the best ways to suppress weeds while retaining soil moisture. Organic mulches like straw, just make sure it hasn't been sprayed. Grass clippings or wood chips break down over time, and those help enrich the soil. If pests become a persistent issue, consider row covers or natural deterrents like neem oil or diatomaceous earth to keep your plants safe without harmful chemicals. I also discovered a few years ago that diluted raw milk helps with keeping pests at bay. I had so much milk from my cow when I moved in that I used it during gardening season, so that was fun. Also, irrigation and watering systems need to be checked before the heat of summer arrives. Drip irrigation is one of the most efficient methods for conserving water while ensuring plants receive constant hydration. This is so important. If you use soaker hoses or sprinklers, inspect them for leaks and clogs to maintain an even distribution of water. There's nothing like when the hot spell comes around and your water's not working properly. Trust me, I've been there. Just check everything early. Rainwater collection systems are also an excellent way to supplement your garden's watering needs while reducing dependence on municipal water sources. I think it's wild though that some places make it illegal to collect rainwater. Like, what? Who gets to decide if you can collect rainwater? That's like a basic human right, in my opinion. Spring is also a time of renewal, not just for our plants and gardens, but also for livestock. So making sure to conduct spring health checks is vital to ensure your animals are in good condition after the winter months, and winter can be harsh on them. So you have deworming deworming, the hoof trimming, and just general wellness assessments. These should be performed on all livestock to detect any early signs of illness. So for me, that is checking for parasites, ensuring proper nutrition, and addressing any deficiencies with mineral supplements is vital for your health of your livestock. So you need to be keeping an eye on them. I feel like spring, they're coming out of winter. Winter's been tough. I mean, I'm talking about my goats and my chickens. Winter's been tough on them, and now they're going through this transition phase, and so they need that extra support. So for my goats specifically, I will be giving them copper boluses as they become deficient through the winter, and I give it to them every 6 months. Copper deficiency comes through the minerals in the water, interfering with copper absorption, and molybdenum, I think that's how you say it, molybdenum in hay interferes with copper absorption. So I have to be extra on top of that. I notice copper deficiency by their tail fur splitting, so like fish tails, their coats losing color, and their noses going bald. I also have to treat more frequently for parasites as we go through the wet season of spring. You also have pasture rotation to keep in mind as you are going into summer, which is another crucial aspect of livestock management, because overgrazing can lead to depleted forage and soil erosion. So it's essential to rotate pastures if you have livestock, and if you can, to allow regrowth and maintain those healthy grazing areas. I mean, healthy grazing areas in grass is worth so much because our soil has been so depleted. So if necessary, reseeding pastures with beneficial grasses and legumes can improve soil quality and provide nutrient-rich forage for your animals. This can help save you on food costs. It can help save the health of your animals. And this is just something I keep in mind through this season. My goats actually free range, and maybe one day I will have a better gated system. But what my system is now, it works pretty well. I let them out in the morning and they roam the homestead, finding the best eats until the evening. And you definitely want some sort of grazing and rotation system if possible, because it is so beneficial for the soil. Their droppings and not overeating are a recipe for beautiful soil. And this isn't just for goats either. I mean, chicken manure is fertilizer, cow manure is fertilizer, but if you aren't rotating, their droppings can be a breeding ground for parasites, for goats at least. So keep that in mind. Spring is also a prime season for hatching and birthing. Many homesteaders, myself included, welcome new chicks, lambs, or goats kids at this time of year. I'm welcoming multiple batches of goat kids this spring, and right now my goat's udders are filling up, meaning that their bodies are preparing for birth, and I cannot wait. I have 3 goats due in a month and then 1 due in July, so I will be swimming in baby goats. I also plan to hatch chicks. You can get an incubator and put in fertilized eggs and let the process work. It's so fun when the little chicks hatch, and then you get to raise them in a brooder before they go outside and experience life on the rest of the farm. With all of the new life on the homestead, you need to have proper preparation. So that's including setting up the brooders for the chicks or kidding pens for goats, which will ensure a safe and healthy start for newborn animals. I set up my birthing does in the center of their goat house. So they're isolated. They have plenty of space for them and their babies, and they're separated from the other goats and the chickens, so they'd have their own privacy. I leave them in there for the first week or so, depending on how everyone is doing. I check on mama and the babies. I also have my bees. So if you're beekeeping, bees will require attention as well. If you keep bees, this is the time to inspect hives for signs of disease or mite infestations to see if they made it through the winter. So you ensure your bees have enough food, either through supplemental feeding or allowing early spring blooms to flourish, will help them build strong colonies in preparation for summer honey production. I personally am not not supplement feeding my bees anymore. I didn't last year and I got the most beautiful golden honey ever, but most every beekeeper will tell you to supplement feed in the spring. I'm not going to again this year and just see how it goes. Spring is also the perfect time to take care of maintenance tasks before the summer workload becomes overwhelming. This is probably my least favorite part, but trust me, projects in summer pick up fast. So checking fencing and structures for damage from winter is essential to keep livestock contained, predators out, repairing any weak spots in fencing, chicken coops, or barns now will prevent bigger issues down the road when you are just up to your neck in projects and you don't need another one later. So especially if you have escape artist goats or chickens that need to be protected from predators, just go give that little extra nudge and see what's going on out there. Make sure everybody's doing okay, their structures are okay. So those outdoor spaces also need attention. So spring pruning of trees and shrubs, which encourages that healthy growth and prevents overgrowth from interfering with your garden beds or your structures, with moisture getting into your structures. You also can start clearing out dead plants and debris from around the homestead, which will create an organized and productive space for the season ahead. This is so important. It's also my least favorite thing to do. I always prune my raspberries and I need to prune my fruit trees. I'm not sure what to do with my blackberries though, because the years I pruned them, I always had a bust for fruit. But the year I didn't prune them, which was last year, they were incredibly abundant fruit-wise. So just be thinking how you want to manage your foliage and what you want to plant. And also, you will get to know your garden and your homestead over the years and what works and what doesn't. Keep in mind too that even though harvest season is still a few months away, it's important to plan for food preservation now. So that's taking inventory of canning supplies, including jars, lids, pectin. This ensures you're prepared when produce starts rolling in. Make sure your canners are clean and ready to go. Again, the season flies by so fast, so you want to have your gear just ready. Freezing and freeze drying also require planning as well, so ensure you have adequate freezer space for storing those fruits and vegetables and meats. And if you have a freeze dryer, now's the time to clean it, service it, and ensure it's ready for its peak use. I absolutely love my freeze dryer, and it comes in handy when I have large batches of produce and the canners are full. I can just freeze dry all of the excess. And also right now in spring, it's, I don't know about you, but getting ready for foraging. So this is going to depend on where you live, what you can forage, but foraging can be an early source of food. And I actually forage throughout the season, berries, mushrooms, different things. Spring is a great time to gather wild edibles like dandelions, nettles, mushrooms, and wild garlic. So learning to identify and harvest these plants safely can add variety to your diet and increase food self-sufficiency, which is one of my favorite things. I love foraging. My biggest recommendation would be to connect with local foraging groups to see what is available in your area when things are coming in. A lot of people will not share spots where they're finding stuff, but they can give you like elevations, what kind of berries they're finding, what kind of mushrooms they're finding. It is so cool, and you can connect with your community that way. So as you can see, thinking ahead to summer can help you stay on top of all the projects that will be rolling in, what is most important to you, because there is always something to be done around the homestead. So just take it a project at a time, starting with the most important to the least pressing. Spring is a busy but exciting time on the homestead, and getting things done now will set you up for a successful summer and for a successful future on your homestead. So what are you working on this season? Let me know in the comments or reach out to me on social media, Gubba Homestead anywhere. If you found this episode helpful and insightful, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Thank you so much for spending your time here, and until next time, happy homesteading!